I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the podcast a sort of insider of the game, Anthony Lee. He is an anti-guru. He's not an expert. He defends himself against that title, but the word on the street with the people who really know, people like Will Tiernland and other such people, is that this guy does really know all about Amazon. So, Anthony, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So, Anthony, could you give us a bit of a quick background on yourself? How did you come to be selling on Amazon in the first place?
Well, it was kind of a logical progression, right? See, there I am as a waiter in a restaurant for many years. And then, you know, that was the next step, right? No, I'm just kidding. but I really was a server in a restaurant for many years. And I was always the guy that had some kind of side deal or side business. I tried and failed many, 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 many times at so many different things. But just kept plugging away because I knew I wanted something else. And then I happened upon a YouTube video that somebody had shared on Facebook. And to this day, I don't even know who it was that shared it anymore. But it was all about the process of, you know, buying goods at a lower price and selling them at a higher price on Amazon. It just made sense. Kind of made it seem like everything I had done up to that point was just silly, and I should have been doing that the whole time. So I jumped in as quickly as I could after that one video.
Wow. So one video changed your life, basically.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, it's a shame you're not selling that video, because otherwise that would be the killer testimonial, wouldn't it?
Well, the guy that made the video, actually, he's an affiliate for one of those big FBA programs.
Yeah.
So I guess to some degree, he does sell the video, and he does quite well. But I definitely credit him and his information for me getting into this industry.
Excellent. So was that all about private label from the beginning, or was it there a different approach, wholesale, retail arbitrage?
Actually, it was all about private label from the beginning. I didn't learn about the arbitrage models and wholesaling until I'd already been private labeling for a while.
Okay. So that's, yeah, similar to me, and I think quite a few people in the same boat, although I know some people who've come from the RA background and wholesale. I know that, so for example, Will Tiernland, who we had on last interview, is very big in the wholesale thing still. So
yeah, I learned everything I know about wholesale from Will, actually.
Interesting. Yeah, well, it's largely true for me, which on the one hand isn't much, and on the other hand, it comes from a pretty great source. So yeah, something I might look into, although this is primarily focused on private label, this podcast. But so tell us a bit where you sell. Is it just in the USA? Is it in the UK or anywhere else?
Currently just in the USA. I have plans to expand, but I think everybody expands their business in their own way. A lot of people made the leap international, and I put that on pause so that I could focus on actually trying to build off Amazon channels. So that's
interesting. Off Amazon as well. And that might be something we come back to later. So I'm going to go straight to the sort of newbie questions, because I think in some ways they're still the ones that stump me, which is, what are your criteria for product selection? How do you find products?
Well, I have a standard answer, and then I have the, you know, what actually happens. The standard.
Excellent. Oh, let's have both.
They're always different. Okay. The standard answer is, you know, I always tell people to try and find things that they see a need for, that they use. Pretty much the best thing you could do is walk around your kitchen or your dining room or living room, and when you see something there, and the reason why is, I know it sounds so rudimentary, so silly, but the reason why is because if you find something that you use, then you will be able to identify with your target demographic easier, because you are the target demographic. And that just makes, you know, having to crawl out of your box and figure out your avatar so much less complicated. But you know, you find stuff that you need, and then you check the numbers. That's a big part of the equation, though. You can't skip that part. You check the numbers to see if other people are doing it, are making money off of this product. Numbers check out, then it's worth, you know, going deeper in. But that's how I found a couple of products.
Okay.
However, what I normally find is that I just end up running into something super cool and being like, oh my gosh, this is super cool. I've got to sell this. Whether or not I use it or not, it's just something that I really like. But I think that's the primary thing, is I always find something that I just have kind of a connection with. I know a lot of people say don't fall in love with your products. I think that there's two different ways you could do it, though. One way is just, you know, search coldly, search for a need in the marketplace and fill it. And then the other way is, you know, follow something that you can really get behind, because then it won't be a chore. And that's kind of the way that I go. So I find a product I really like, and then I run the numbers with, you know, there's a bunch of software out there that does it. You know, basically you go type in the search term on Amazon, click the program, and it kind of shows you based on BSR what the estimated sales volume is.
Okay, so would that be things like Jungle Scout, presumably?
Yes.
I mean, you're very carefully avoiding naming it. This is very sweet of you, but
yes.
It's not a like product placement, but yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's, I think most of us tend to use that, but excellent. So I like the fact that there's like the standard sort of proper way of doing it, and then there's reality. Like, it's very honest of you to say that. I like it. And that's very anti-guru already. And how do you run into stuff that's super cool, as you put it?
Well, by far the best opportunity that I've seen was my most recent experience, which is when I went to a couple of trade shows in Hong Kong.
Okay.
And I know that's a big commitment. That's a big jump, right? You're leaving the country, but you don't always have to. There are actually trade shows everywhere, but that's just one example of a place you could run into it. And another is just, you know, to be mindful. I remember when I decided to move from the baby category into kitchen, because I really want to have products in like every category.
Right.
So in the kitchen. So when I was thinking about how am I going to get into the kitchen, every time I went to the grocery store, I would go to the kitchen section and just see what they have, you know, see what's out there already. I would peruse friends, kitchen drawers and cabinets. They always look at me like I was crazy, but you know, I did that because I think if you're just mindful and open, then I don't know, it's almost like the universe will hand you something at some point.
I like it. I really, really like that, because what you're doing is you're getting away from the obsession with the magic tool that's going to sort your entire life out, and actually just thinking about changing your own thinking, and then stuff emerges. That's very deep. That's very guru, by the way. But I of course, you want to be the anti-guru, but I like it. You're changing the way you think and look. It's already very deep. I like it very much. Now, tell me something else. Do you believe, I was going to ask you, do you believe in staying in one Amazon category? But it sounds like you have a wish to be across the board with that. But what do you pick each product separately on its own merits? Or do you try and build a sort of brand within one category?
I start with the product on its own merits, with a plan to expand in throughout the category by expanding the brand. So basically, my approach is, when you find that product that you know you can really get behind, that you can make money and also make into just a really awesome product to sell, then you start thinking of the implications. Okay, what are other complementary products? How do I build this out into a whole brand within this niche? So start with a product, but then it ends up growing into a full line.
Interesting. Yeah, because so many different people have, I mean, some very successful people have really different takes on that, but that's very interesting. But in a way, I'm getting a feeling that your process actually, in reality, is pretty organic. That something strikes you, you go further with it. If the numbers check out, you expand on the basis of that thing that almost came into your life by chance.
Yeah, actually.
Wow. Interesting. Now, the other question that keeps coming up, and that I'm obviously any business owner on Amazon is faced with, is the fact that you're not the only person watching a YouTube video and being trained in, you know, or in turn onto the private label opportunity. Obviously, many, many other people are looking for those opportunities. And so the competition is increasing pretty quickly in the private label market, particularly in the USA. What's your overall approach to dealing with that?
Well, the thing is I think a lot of people kind of look at the competition and, you know, you see all these posts and articles about the golden days of FBA are over, and there's a lot of skies falling kind of stuff happening.
Yeah, that's true.
But the truth is, the days when it was so easy to make money that you could just trip over something and suddenly make $100,000 a month, yeah, those days might be over, but that was always going to be short-lived, you know?
Yeah.
Now, Amazon is leveling out just like any other platform, any other business. I mean, if you're going to start a business, you have the same odds, and Amazon is just becoming no different. But as far as there not being enough opportunity because it's too saturated, that's silly. And the reason why is because as more and more people jump on the platform to sell all these different products, more and more products end up on Amazon. Like, we're completely discounting when we talk about this. People are completely discounting the fact that new products are finding their way on Amazon. And those brand new products, at the moment in time in which they're introduced on Amazon, only have one seller.
Yeah.
Until it gets more. So opportunity is growing constantly. It's just a matter of treating it like a business and, you know, going in there and doing it right. Realize that you don't sell product. You don't have an Amazon business. You have a physical products business and you sell to a market. In which case, Amazon is just a channel.
Okay.
Grow it as much, you know, leverage it as much as you possibly can, and you'll do fine.
Excellent. Now, you were talking about the fact that you mentioned earlier about sales channels off Amazon, and you're just saying now explicitly you have Amazon is a sales channel. Do you use other sales or marketing channels?
I'm in the process of expanding that right now. Just found a way to connect. Well, it took actually a while for me to learn that FBA is probably the most affordable fulfillment center or system.
Mm.
So, I mean, because I spent probably 6 months trying to find the best third-party fulfillment center out there. And then I finally concluded that Amazon was the best one. So the next step was finding programs or companies that could connect my Amazon fulfillment to these other channels. So I just opened up putting my products on Jet. I think I'm still waiting on approval because the approval process on Jet's kind of long. And then I have somebody building out templates for our eBay listings. And then next month, we're slated to be on Sears and Rakuten. So it's all happening.
Wow.
Shopify site's almost up. So we can start playing with paid advertising. So,
right. So it'll be really worth us talking to you in a few months down the line to get a comparison of you know, how it's doing.
Absolutely.
In a few months' time. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, to come back to something else you were saying, sorry to dot around, but I'm just trying to pick up on the words you're using. You talked about an avatar, and you were saying that, you know, being in your target demographics, so being your own customer, is great because you have less work to create your customer avatar. Now, that's a phrase I've heard, but not in the Amazon world. Tell us more about customer avatar. What does that mean, and why is that important to you?
I think a lot of people... Well, first of all, you have to understand, though, because FBA has such a low barrier of entry, a lot of people coming into it have never really done much business before. Mm. So they may not have ever actually run into the concept of the avatar. But if you sell anything, you always have a target market, a target demographic, basically your ideal customer. And that's what the avatar is. It's the person that's most likely to see your product, love your product, and buy your product. That is your avatar. And you really want to focus on marketing to them. And the reason why is because if you try to go too broad, you might miss out on a large portion of really easy sales because the message was too diluted. It's much better to capitalize on the ones that you know are absolutely going to love and buy your product. So that's the concept. That's what the avatar is. And the whole reason behind them existing is so that you know who you need to focus your language to. And on Amazon, it works like anywhere else. When you're writing your listing, you know, you're putting in the bullets and the description. Are you doing it to, you know, general? I mean, think about it. Let's say you sell male enhancement, right? Right off the bat, your language is going to be about, you know, men, right? You're not going to be like people. You're going to say he and him and that's the language. And so you refine that even deeper the more you know what your avatar looks like.
Okay, great. Now, funnily enough, I was listening to a podcast. It's Pat Flynn, the Smart Passive Income podcast, of all things. But he was talking to somebody. He's just written a book called Ask, and I can't for the life of me remember who the author was now, but he's built lots and lots of businesses for where he's consulted for lots of major businesses, Fortune 500 companies, using a sort of surveying technique. So do you find some way to engage with your customers and consciously ask them anything like that, or is it a more unconscious process? Or
it's really hard to do that on Amazon, just because Amazon customers are technically not your customers.
Right, exactly.
Once you pull them out of Amazon onto your own stuff through, you know, product inserts or whatever means you have, surveying is a very, very, very effective tool. Everybody that I know that currently has successful sales outside of Amazon is surveying their customers. So that's a very good way to do it. Until you get to that point, if you're just looking at Amazon, the only thing you can really do is pay attention to your data. So one of the things that I did was I ran AMS, which is Amazon Marketing Service ads. I got in through the Vendor Express loophole before they closed it.
Right.
I was able to use those ads. And while analytics on Amazon are absolutely horrible,
yeah,
AMS actually does offer you some demographic. You have to make a bunch of sales, but they offer you some demographic information. And so I would do things like that. I would look at that, or I would look at, if I ran Facebook ads, just look at the demographics and try to, over time, paint the clearest picture possible. And I was working off of mainly gender, age range, but it told me a lot of stuff that I didn't know when I started. I mean, I started a mom's, anybody that has a kid, but you know, that later slowly formed into a more specific person.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting, that thing. You've touched on the whole thing that we try and deal with, that a lot of the conventional good quality business thinking that you'd like to apply, like split testing, like, you know, any form of demographic information, obviously is extremely hard to get on Amazon. But I like the fact you found a way around it. But I have to say, for example, with surveying, if you have got people, you can survey. I mean, I've surveyed people on my email list for the podcast, which is a lot easier because they are kind of my listeners. They're not anyone else's. But it does tell you all sorts of things. For example, I expected, because I've known a certain degree about marketing, that a certain percentage of people would be men in their 40s, because that's me. But actually 85% of the respondents were men in their, you know, and were men, and something like, you know, 35, 40% were in their 40s. I was a bit shocked. So it sometimes confirms what you think, but sometimes it really tells you just how far your demographics are skewed towards a very particular set of people.
Yeah, exactly. And that's important to know, though, because that could completely change your language, not just your marketing language too, but who you're hitting whenever you're doing paid advertising, which is huge, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why the power of the customer avatar is very interested that you brought that word up, because you're the first person that I've heard who works primarily within the Amazon space that has used that word. But actually, Andre Chaperon, the email marketing guru, well, if I'm allowed to use the word guru, is very big on this thing. Indeed, I mean, he makes it such a big part of his sort of email marketing training. So very, very interesting to hear you use that word indeed. So now, I was just going to come back to Amazon, talking about the increased competition. I understand that, you know, there's still opportunities there for people who are properly business-minded. What is your approach if you're in a marketplace where you think there's still opportunity, but the competition is, shall we say, moderate and increasing to tough over time? How do you deal with that situation?
Well, my approach has also evolved. Before, it used to be find a product and do it really, really, really well. And now I still think that you should do that, but I came up with a new tagline, and that is, he who has the most SKUs wins.
Right.
I've just noticed that to be the case. And the reason why is because once you get to a point where you learn what you're doing, even if, like right now, if you don't know anything and you go on the Amazon marketplace with a product and you fail miserably, failing miserably could be your listing is buried under oblivion and it'll never see the light of day. However, once you learn,
yeah,
you know, how to do certain things, then failing for you could be, well, my product only sells 5 a day. Well, you know, yeah, if that's an $11 product, that doesn't make you a lot of money. But imagine if you had 300 of those.
Yeah.
Then the numbers don't look so bad. Like, oh, I only sell 5 a day, but times 300, I'm, you know, paying my bills.
Yeah. Okay. So in other words, basically, once you know what you're doing in order to make just a sort of pretty modest number of sales per day, you just rinse and repeat with a hell of a lot of skews.
I think that's a really good approach because, I mean, yeah. If you look at it, there's not a whole lot of bad that can come out of that because even if you start expanding outside of Amazon, having a fleshed out catalog, you know, it only fleshes out your brand. It only gives you more to offer, you know, for wholesale deals that will come up over time,
yeah.
You know, puts more out there on other marketplaces where other products might do better than they do on Amazon. So there's just a whole lot of benefits to it. Now, that is a very capital intensive way to do business, but I think everything we do on Amazon private label is capital intensive. So it's just a matter of being very intelligent in your choices for, you know, inventory and expansion.
Excellent. So yeah, that you're answering half the questions that are coming to my head, which I was about to say, but isn't that capital intensive, which you've just said, and how do you deal with that? Intelligent choices. Okay. So tell us more about intelligent choices. What would be intelligent choice use of your capital, in other words?
My advice is very different from a lot of people's. I think most people come into this business thinking, if I could just make like $8,000 a month in sales and have a 45% margin, I can quit my job. But
yeah,
I'm going to tell you, I personally think you should keep your job,
yeah,
and reinvest all of your money.
Yeah.
And some people will say for a year, and I'll say five years. And the reason why is because think about a traditional business.
Yeah.
You're going to give it 5 to 10 years before you give up on it. Well, you've got to treat this like a business. So I say plug away at your day job, because in the end, what you're going to end up with is a legacy that your family will feed off of for generations. And that's a tough sacrifice, but you know, if you reinvest everything repeatedly, you will end up really building out your catalog, and you'll just have a lot more options in the future. So that's my approach anyway. That and intelligently leveraging credit. I haven't taken advantage of any Amazon loans yet, but I do take advantage of like company or business credit cards that I get offered.
Yeah.
Just because I can pay those off at my own pace. And I do that. And it's actually building my credit tremendously. And I'm also opening new SKUs. So it's a win-win.
Excellent. So what are the situations? So obviously that I've heard, like, talking of gurus, you made me really think about this guru word now. All these people positioning themselves as experts. The rich dad, poor dad, Robert Kiyosaki, said debt is like a loaded gun. Treat with caution. So in what situations would you advise using debt? And in what situations would you be more cautious? And where would you say don't do it?
Well, I am most definitely not a financial expert. So this is a difficult question for me to answer. I think that if you can afford to make triple the minimum payment per month, then leveraging debt for the purpose of expanding your brand is okay, because you're making enough money already to make substantial payments on it. And so in the end, that's not going to hurt your credit, because the money, you know, to pay it off is there.
Yeah.
But what will happen is you have new inventory to make even more money off of. If you are struggling with that, like, basically this is a strategy more for people who have a couple products that are already chugging along pretty good.
Mm.
If you're struggling with that, you're starting with zero, understand that that's much more of a risk. That doesn't mean don't take it. I took the risk. Look, I started this business on 3 maxed out credit cards because I had zero. Absolutely. I mentioned I was a waiter, right? I had zero to put into a business.
Yeah.
You just have to be aware of the risks. And I would also definitely say, be careful leveraging debt on inventory if you're going to go into one of these super, super saturated niches. Look, there are still people out there that are just now starting businesses trying to sell meat claws. If that's you, I mean, if you have a passion for meat claws, you want to sell them, that's cool. But understand that market is so saturated, you might want to take out a $15,000 credit line for it.
Yeah. So you want to get some proven traction in the marketplace if you can. Although, as you said, well, I guess it comes down to very personal risk taste for, you know, what's the word? Risk aversion versus risk tolerance, I suppose. And you were willing to get in there with 3 maxed out credit cards.
Well, because I knew my idea was good, though.
Okay, yeah. Now, it's very interesting that you say, if you've already got a couple of products up, that the next step, because I'm realizing that I've got, you know, I can't remember how many SKUs got live at any one time when they're not out of stock or I've decided to discontinue them or whatever. But six or seven. I should know, shouldn't I? It's not many, but yeah, I'm realizing that the next stage is to get some capital in because I can't expand any further without that at any kind of decent pace. So very interesting to hear you talk about that. And yeah, credit cards does make sense. I was thinking of approaching banks, but as you say, you can kind of control the speed you pay it off. That makes a lot of sense. And meanwhile, you're building credit. Makes a lot of sense. I was going to ask, you touched on this model. If I could just make $8,000 a month at 45% margin, I can quit my day job in, you know, X months. What sort of, this is like a how long is a piece of string question, so forgive the question, but it's kind of one that has to be asked. What sort of margin would you aim for with your products in general, or are there particular things that would say you'd accept something lower or higher?
Okay, I personally like to focus on hitting a target that looks to be around 50 to 55% margin. And the reason why is because it never turns out the way it looks.
Yeah.
But at least that gives you wiggle room, right? So my products, I went in, I saw 50% margin, I went after them. Competition hit, we played the price war, and now I have an average across all of my SKUs of 36%. Which is not anywhere near as ideal as the 50, but man, if I had started lower, imagine I wouldn't have wiggle room. Like, I'd be stuck.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. I have to say, that sounds like a pretty healthy margin. If you've got, you know, lots of SKUs up, that's good going. So, but interesting. Yeah. So you aim a hell of a lot higher. I'm so glad that you are a very good anti-guru. I see why you call yourself the anti-guru, because really, yeah, that a hell of a lot of people say, yeah, just get a 50% margin product and here's what comes out. And I'm like, yeah, but that's never really like that. I've never experienced that. You know, it's never like that. There's always extra costs. And as you said, there's always competition. So yeah, thanks for the reality check. But yeah, as you say, if you've got, you know, 500 SKUs at 36% margin, or however many it is, then suddenly that's a hell of a lot of income. Wow, what a great, straightforward anti-guru that man is. So Anthony Lee, very, very much the anti-guru. I can really see why he defends himself against that thing. For example, the way he finds products, standard, real, you know, the standard versus the real answer. So the standard answer is find things you use and then check the numbers. So the real answer is decide on the category, then become mindful. I like that. It's very kind of zen. And yet, actually, it's very, very feet on the ground, actually. Just think about one thing and just become aware of everything around you that tells you about that one thing. For example, you get obsessed with kitchen categories, go and look in the shops, look in your friend's cupboard. So focus on one thing for a while and open your mind. I think that makes a lot of sense. Also, starting a product on its own merits and then expanding into a category, that's a kind of neat way of dealing with this problem of, on the one hand, creating a brand in a particular niche, and on the other hand, finding something that's real, that's got traction in the marketplace rather than abstract. And then looking at the competition. So don't worry about the sky is falling, but there's still opportunities there. That's very reassuring stuff. And I love the fact that he's talking about customer avatars. As I said to Anthony on the actual interview, that's the first time I've heard somebody talk about a customer avatar on Amazon. So in other words, the idea that you've got a target demographic and a target customer. As he said, it's quite hard to find out, but I really would advise you, from my own personal experience, to build a customer email list as quick as you can, because then you can actually survey them. And that's something I've started doing, as I said, with the amazing FBA audience, you, because it's a lot easier to find out about you because you are my customers. But I'm beginning to transfer Amazon customers through product inserts. Just a side note on that, I found that for some reason, the percentage of people in the USA that will sign up for a review club of some kind is way, way higher than the UK. I don't quite know why that is. That's something I'll look into. But if you're based in the USA, certainly product inserts will get you some email signups. If you want some numbers, I would say I've got something just over 200 product, call it review signups in the USA. And that's over 2,000 orders now for that. So it's a, you know, it's got to be sort of 5 to 10% of people maximum. So don't expect a huge email list. But if you get a list of, say, 30 people and you survey them, that will give you a very good starting point. So any kind of feedback from the marketplace is important. You can also just email people and just ask them, just email them via the Amazon system and just set up a little sort of survey. That way, if you like, I mean, it's an unusual thing to do, so don't push it too hard. But, you know, there's always ways of doing it. And then dealing with increasing competition, just accept the fact that there's a certain amount of competition and just try and expand, making intelligent use of credit as well, which is, as you said, a very personal choice, what your risk aversion level is when it comes to credit. So be responsible about it. I'm not suggesting anyone go into debt without thinking it through and without
maybe talking to their accountant. I think that's an extremely good conversation. And if you don't have an accountant on board yet, because you're starting out, that's fine. But I really, really advise you using an accountant once your business is up and running, because an accountant will have just a way of looking at things that for them is absolutely everyday normal, which for you or me would be a total revelation. So they can really help you. And my accountant, Penny Lowe, has been very, very helpful. So if you are thinking of getting credit, then get your figures lined up and go talk to your accountant about it and get a reality check from somebody who's fluent with numbers. That's my advice. And then finally, the margin you're aiming for. Aim for 50%, but accept it never works out that way. That's, again, anti-guru stuff. I like it very much. So Anthony's obviously got fantastic things to share. Tune in again for episode 50, which will be published in 2 or 3 days' time, which is the second part of the interview with Anthony, where he's going to focus on his whole process from finding a new product, checking the numbers, going through the supply chain, freight, all that nitty-gritty stuff that we all hit. And he's found some great solutions and some great thoughts about Amazon and where it's going over the next few years as well, which is really, really interesting stuff. So don't forget to tune in for that.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.